Welcome, everyone, to episode 341 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to talk about the new look Brooklyn Nets, a battle between Joel Embiid and Kendrick Perkins, and some of the concerns now that players are officially in the Orlando bubble. Before we get to that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is a man who will be able to send his son to school this fall without being totally terrified. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Well, maybe. Well, I'm optimistic, but given that the coronavirus is a complete shit show, I just don't know. And in terms of how I'm doing, let's just put it this way. My apartment is nowhere near as nice as the hotel room that Rajon Rondo is in.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I am, apparently, because that was not up to par for Mr. Rondo.
Yes, we will get into that a little bit later. First, I want to hit on the Brooklyn Nets, because since we last spoke, the Brooklyn Nets are an entirely different team. We already knew they were going to be without Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, both of whom are recovering from injuries. They are also now without DeAndre Jordan, who tested positive for coronavirus and decided not to go to Orlando. Spencer Dinwiddie, same deal there. And who else? Wilson Chandler, I believe, is sitting out as well. So in their stead, with all of those, I think it's close to 50 points per game now sitting out, and the Nets looking like roadkill for whoever faces them in round one, they decided to bring in none other than Jamal Crawford and Michael Beasley as substitute slash replacement players for all the guys who are sitting out. What are your thoughts on the new look Nets as they head down to Orlando?
See, this, kids, is what you call baiting.
It sure is.
Yeah. So I've been very, very vocal in my dislike of always having to rehash older players instead of actually giving younger players an opportunity, because I think there's more to actually gain there. Instead, the Nets said, hey, let's sign a 40-year-old and Michael Beasley, who, if memory serves, he was born in 1989, so 31, 32. Now, that's not really the end of the world, I think. Like, that signing, I think, is on some level justifiable. But 40-year-old Jamal Crawford, I understand that on some level he can still be productive offensively, but that's it. Like, defensively, he's an utter train wreck. Over the past 5-7 years of his career, defensively, he's been horrid, absolutely horrid. You know, he's still thrown to sometimes dribble his way into weird situations, and that's despite having the maturity and, you know, of a 40-year-old. And I say this actually liking Jamal Crawford as a human being very, very much. Like, this man is a very reasonable, very smart dude. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely nothing, you know, and I don't want to point any fingers at him on a personal level. I think he's the bee's knees. Isn't that what you guys call it? But in terms of, like, the basketball acumen, I just don't think there's a fit for Jamal Crawford in 2020. But lo and behold, I guess I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you don't buy into the argument that Jamal Crawford is a walking bucket or different with a little snorty face emoji?
Well, I do if this was 2007.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, he did, I guess the last time he averaged, he was at 18.6 in 2013-14. Down to 15.8 in 14-15, 14.2 in 15-16. He was at 7.9 last season with the Suns in about 20 minutes a game. So, look, if he's playing 30-plus minutes a night, he's going to get you 15 to 20 points. But right, his field goal percentage since 2013-14 is a whopping 40.8%. So it's not going to be very efficient. And as you said, defensively, he gives you nothing. He is a gigantic minus on that end of the floor. Mm-hmm. So I mean, the Nets are screwed either way. If you lose, you know, already losing Kyrie and KD, they were not going to challenge whoever they face in round one, whether it's the Bucks, the Raptors, the Celtics, whoever. They're roadkill either way. But this is just, I mean, they'll be like morbidly entertaining to watch because I guess they're doing the Timberwolves thing where they just don't care about defense and they're just going
right.
to, it's like first to 130 wins. But the problem is the two guys they signed aren't efficient. So the other team is going to be the first to 130.
I mean, see, here's the thing. I've seen a few people actually say out loud on Twitter, which I probably wouldn't do if I were them, you know, this is Michael Beasley's time to shine.
Oh, no.
And I'm just like, no. No, because you just hit it right on the head. This dude is just not efficient. He hasn't been for a while. Like, he did have a small period of time, like, when he was right in, like, his physical prime, you know, 25, you know, 28 years old, kind of, where he was actually pretty efficient as a scorer and where I would argue the teams should have given him more of a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, like, no, he's like the best example of an American player dominating the Chinese league.
Yeah,
that's where you are with him, and yeah, I just don't know what the Nets are hoping to gain. But this is just what I don't understand, right? It all boils down to why not give a young guy, or to in this case, two young guys, a shot
mm-hmm.
from someone who may not have NBA experience, and see if you can find a gem. This seems like two very un-Sean Marksy decisions to me.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it just because of the extent of losses. Like, it's just no team has been battered as badly as the Nets, although the Wizards are right. getting close. So, like, I get it from a sense of, like, we just have so much production to replace that if you give it to, like, three G League guys, are they going to be able to do that? Or is it just going to be, like, Caris LeVert having to take 50 shots a game and probably tearing his hamstring? So from that perspective, I understand. I mean, as you said, Jamal Crawford, at the age he is, this is not an extended tryout for next year. It does sound like they're going to use this for Beasley as an evaluation for next year, and maybe he could latch on with the team moving forward because apparently he and KD are pretty close. Now, again, I think you said it well. Like, this is probably not going to be Michael Beasley at age 31 breaking out and finally having the career we expected for him. I think, like, you know, the last 10 plus years, he is who he is at this point. Like, that ship has sailed. The player he was in college did not translate to the NBA and will not be translating to the NBA. So if he can fit in well and play a certain role and prove that he can, I get that. But yeah, I mean, it looks like they're in the process of signing Donta Hall as well. He's a 22-year-old, played a bit for Detroit this year.
Yeah, that one I like.
Right, that's the kind of thing that, you know, I guess where the Nets are organizationally, like, they probably feel the pressure to bring in guys who can help right away, whereas a guy like Donta Hall, he's 22 years old, has, you know, four games of regular season experience, played 48 minutes in total. Looking ahead to next year, you're not going to necessarily rely on this guy as a 6th, 7th, 8th man, whereas maybe in a perfect world, Michael Beasley could turn into that for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's 15 roster spots, 2 two-way spots. Like, the end of the bench matters, too. Like, I think teams often place a priority on those first 8, 9, 10 rotation spots because, of course, those are the guys who are going to play the most minutes. And those right. are the guys you're going to rely on both in the regular season and the playoffs. But if you have that guy toward the end of the bench who you can send back to the, like, back and forth to the G League, get him more experience that way. I mean, this is what always ends up killing these big two, big three, big four models is, you know, the cheap bench depth at the end of your bench either goes away or signs with someone else or ages out. And then you're suddenly stuck with, oh crap, we have, you know, three or four guys on max contracts. And we have no depth and we have no youth. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, you know, for taking a flyer on a young guy like that, I fully support it. I can see organizationally why the Nets feel the pressure to go with proven veterans, even though in an ideal world, they just, you know, take a flyer on the best G League players and see what happens.
Well, I guess my question is, do you actually think that Jamal Crawford and I was about to say Malik Beasley, I'm not going to put that on him, Michael Beasley, is going to translate to more wins than if you signed like Dante Hall and two other G Leaguers?
Right.
Do you think that the presence of the veteran leadership is actually something that translates to W's?
No, not this year. I mean, this year they're screwed either way.
Right?
Maybe next year, again, in the perfect world where Beasley fits in well and can right. play a specific role and doesn't go outside of that role, maybe. And just because he has the NBA experience and because when KD comes back next year, when Kyrie comes back, you're going to look to hit the ground running. Like they are in win-now mode. They are not in rebuilding mode, so they're probably not as focused on developing some of their younger guys beyond the ones that they already have, beyond, you know, the Jared Allens, LeVerts of the world. But again, with that said, those guys will all age out, or you're going to trade some of them for a third star, or, you know, Joe Harris can leave this offseason in free agency.
Oh yeah, I've said that too.
This summer. Oh, yeah, it's going to be forever. But it is worth, I think, you know, having some youth on the bench in that end of the bench spot for developmental purposes. But yeah, I mean, this year, no, there's nothing they can do. It sucks that they're even going down. It's just a waste of everyone's time that they're going down, and like, it's extra risk for them. I wonder if the NBA knew what was going to happen with the Nets and the Wizards, and they, you know, there's no way they could have, obviously, but if they did, like, I'd love to inject Adam Silver with truth serum right now and be like, all right, seriously, would you rather just have the Blazers and the Pelicans move to the East for one season, take the Nets and the Wizards out, and then, like, actually get, you know, I mean, who wants to see, like, one of the Nets or the Wizards is going to make the playoffs, whereas two of the Grizzlies, Pelicans, and Blazers are not. Who really right. wants to see the Bucks annihilate the Nets or the Wizards in round one? Like, Giannis doesn't have to play, and they're still going to sweep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just have the answer right there. The Bucks would like to see that.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's about it.
Right. No, I completely hear you. And this is why I think there should still be a debate about the 1-16 format. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the 1-16 format had a lot of interest a couple years ago, and then there was a lot of pushback on it recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think we kind of began to ignore it a little bit too soon. I still think it's worth just kind of browsing through the whole idea, because if you look at it, I understand that there could be travel concerns. I definitely do. But as you and I have talked about at length as well on this podcast, these guys aren't flying commercially. They aren't staying at a Motel 6. Like, I think right. they'll manage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, Mort, since we're talking about some bubble concerns here, I think it's a good place for us to transition into Joel Embiid, who finally spoke with reporters this week ahead of the Sixers going down to Orlando, and he expressed some hesitation about the whole thing. I mean, I'm going to try to find the exact quote here. He did say that he thought about opting out, but, you know, because he said basketball is not all that matters. I have family, I have myself to look out for. But then he did say, you know, I want to represent my city. I've been here too long. This is my opportunity. I feel like we have a great chance. So he's nervous about the entire bubble working, because he said there's some guys that like to go out. Like, I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to put everyone else at risk. But the question is everybody else going to do the same? Just being around this business, I surely don't think so. Right. So I think those are fair concerns, right? I mean, we could start there. I don't begrudge any player, regardless of whether it's a Joel Embiid or like Shake Milton, said a lot of these same things where he was just like, I don't know that we should be playing right now. I don't think this is going to work. And I don't begrudge any of the players who come out and say that. Do you?
Right. No. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know damn well that, no, I don't begrudge them for saying that whatsoever. I think those are very reasonable concerns. And hell, I mean, this thing is, what, 3 weeks away from starting, and I'm still skeptical. Right. I really am. You know, so many things could pop up during these times. So, no, I don't begrudge players for having opinions whatsoever. Quite the contrary, obviously.
Right. Well, Kendrick Perkins did not agree. Kendrick Perkins, who is quickly rising the ranks of the worst sports commentators anywhere. Like, Skip Bayless better watch out, because Kendrick is coming for his throne.
Mm-hmm.
He went on, I think, ESPN's First Take, I believe this was on Wednesday. And here is his exact quote when asked about Joel Embiid's comments. He said, "Do you want to hoop or not? I don't hear none of the other contenders complaining. I don't hear LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard complaining. I don't hear Jason Tatum and Giannis complaining. To me, this is just an excuse. If they get knocked out, this is going to be the excuse because their superstar was halfway in. His mental wasn't there. Oh, I'm complaining. I don't like the idea. Man, go down there and hoop. I ain't trying to hear that, man. That's a billion-dollar bubble."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one thing for Kendrick Perkins, who had a successful NBA career, you know, 14-year vet or whatever. He won a championship with the Celtics in 2008. Great. All of that. Wonderful. Kendrick Perkins is sitting in his house studio right now. Like, he is not taking any of the risk that any of the NBA players are. I don't want to hear anyone, whether it's Kendrick Perkins, who is a former player, or any other sports commentator, I don't want to hear people blasting NBA players right now for expressing hesitation about going to this bubble. There are things that we will talk about shortly that we can blast NBA players for, but for having skepticism about this overall plan, I don't think that's one of them.
So I have many thoughts on this, and in particular Kendrick Perkins. And, you know, I'm with you in terms of he is just a horrible analyst who's actually hurting the game, because he's making the players look bad, even though there's no reason for them to look bad. They aren't, but he's trying to paint that picture of them. Mm-hmm. He's trying to put some negativity on those players. My bigger issue, honestly, is with ESPN here.
Mm.
I think ESPN found a player who's willing to say whatever he wants, even though it's not vetted in terms of, like, you know, logic. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, he'll just spout out dumb stuff that has no hold in reality whatsoever. And they're squeezing everything they have off of that because they know, hey, it worked when we had Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith yelling at each other. Mm-hmm. It works when we have dumb commentary. When we have people on our channel saying a lot of dumb stuff, that gets picked up in the media and people start to talk about it. And that means engagement for us, and it means name recognition. It means more people tune in. This, to me, is the crux of the issue. I don't really care what Kendrick Perkins has to say. He holds no merit in my book. I don't care about Kendrick Perkins' opinion. This is a dude who averaged 5.5 points and 5.5 rebounds for his career, and sometimes is brought up as being, oh, one of the key elements to the... No, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo, those were key elements. You were there for the ride. You were Bill Cartwright at best. Stop it. So I don't really care about Kendrick Perkins. What I care about is I feel that he's actually getting used, and he's mm-hmm. not realizing it. I think the way that they're using Perkins as just to basically filter all this content in a very negative manner is hurting the game.
Yeah.
I think it's hurting the general discourse. I think it hurts their own credibility, but it's ESPN, so they don't have any. They don't care about it. They've thrown it away a long time ago. But it's just, I think it is an ugly situation. And honestly, I'm not even going to comment on what he said about Joel Embiid and what he said about, you know, players, you know, just basically sharing their thoughts, because every player have thoughts on issues and they should have those. And that doesn't mean I'm discrediting Perkins mm-hmm. for having an opinion. It's fine that he does, but I don't have to care about it. I don't have to put any credence into what he has to say. I do, however, have to put credence into Joel Embiid when he says, "I don't feel comfortable." Mm-hmm. Because he's actually playing in the damn bubble. He's actually there.
Right.
Yeah. So, all in all, you know, the too long didn't read version, ESPN, when in terms of Kendrick Perkins specifically, has been trash.
Yeah.
And I put no stock into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've just been really trying to give him the Skip Bayless treatment, which is just like ignore every single thing he says and hope he goes away and hope eventually, you know, Richard Deitch, who now works for The Athletic, used to, like, just absolutely despises Skip Bayless with every bone in his body. And we used to, back in the day when he was with Sports Illustrated, we'd like tweet out ratings of Skip Bayless Show versus Paw Patrol.
Oh, I remember that.
So I want Kendrick Perkins to start getting the Paw Patrol treatment soon, where, like, just I really hope that all of his, like, you know, all of his shows that he's on, at some point people just need to catch on. And he just is, he's being a shock jock. Like, he's intentionally, I think the way you phrased it is right. Like, ESPN is using him because they seem to have figured out that he'll say whatever they want him to say. Or, like, he'll play the role of, you know, the antagonist for any one of these players. Or, like, he'll deliberately say things that are meant to trigger fan bases. Like, I mean, any time he gives an all-time rankings or, like, the top 10 rankings or whatever, they're always just so, absolutely ridiculous that it's clearly meant to spark engagement. Because in the media business, the theory is all engagement is good, even if, you know, you track the sentiment. If you're looking at, like, Twitter replies or whatever, or, like, Facebook comments of any one post, and it's 99% people saying, this guy is a goddamn idiot, get him off the air. No one at ESPN or any of these other major companies is tracking that, or they care about that. They're just saying, oh, 3,000 Facebook comments, let's sell that to the advertisers. So, you know, in that regard, that is why people like Kendrick Perkins not only exist in this business, but thrive. I mean, he's getting more and more opportunities, and it is really frustrating. As you said, like, he is not a good influence for the game right now. We should be propping players up for being willing to take the risk of being separated from their family for potentially months at a time, right. You know, going down into this very uncomfortable situation where, I mean, you know, who knows what can happen. Like, we're seeing it with, we talked about it last episode too, with Major League Soccer. Now two teams have already pulled out of that tournament because they all tested negative before they went to Orlando. They get to Orlando and there's a widespread outbreak on their team. You know, like, that. All we're recording this on Friday, so all of the teams, all of the NBA teams started coming in on Tuesday, got there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we're still very, very early into this process. Not every team has even practiced yet. A lot of them are still quarantined in their hotel rooms. We'll start to see in the coming days, and we'll have to hold our breath throughout the coming days. If, you know, positive tests start trickling out, or if, you know, God forbid, like, there is an outbreak on a team, this is all just scary. And I don't blame any player. You know, I don't blame any player for sitting out entirely. Like, I don't think anyone should be criticizing Spencer Dinwiddie for sitting out. And I thankfully haven't heard that very much. Maybe I tuned that part of Kendrick Perkins' dumb stuff out. But, you know, thankfully, for whatever reason, he decided to target Embiid instead. But I will say Embiid got the last laugh because someone on Twitter posted Kendrick Perkins' career highlights, and it was just like him dribbling the ball off of his face for 3 minutes. And that was atop Joel Embiid's Twitter likes for a while. And Kendrick Perkins ended up responding to the person who tweeted that with, like, his actual career highlights, which were mostly just him dribbling the ball off of his face.
Yeah. And just to wrap this all up, you know how you get, you know, Kendrick Perkins off television? He just begins to say smart stuff.
Yeah.
Which is horrifying in its own way, because you know, that's what we should be engaging. That's what we should pump up. But as soon as he starts becoming logical and coherent in his line of thought and the way that he presents arguments, that, you know, if that happens, ESPN is going to cut bait because that's not going to draw in all, you know, the controversy.
Yeah,
and yeah, I think, you know, I think it's a pretty ridiculous situation overall. And, you know, especially given the current climate, I honestly do wonder what their end goal is with Kendrick Perkins, because mm-hmm. I don't think that the way that they're handling that situation is any good.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a shame because you hear a guy like Chris Bosh, who's just like intelligent and is like gives good opinions about things, and you're like, why can't they get guys like him? Why are we catering to the lowest common denominator and going after they guys
can.
Like Perkins?
They can. That's the thing. And here's the thing. I don't even blame Perkins. I don't. Yeah. The one thing is, I don't you know, take him seriously, and that's because he doesn't have anything serious to offer. That's just who he is, which fine, I can respect who he is, but I can also I would gladly just filter him out because I don't agree with 99.9% of the things he has to say. But don't make a mistake about this. ESPN absolutely have every conceivable option to pick up smart players or forward players or just not even forward players, but just smart analytical people who can talk about the game in a very, very, very smart and thorough way. They just don't, because it doesn't draw in clicks. Let me tell you something. Chris Bosh, like you just mentioned, is a great example. You know who the guy I would put into a studio immediately? That's Vince Carter.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that he's only going to get like spot times here and there, maybe on ESPN, maybe he gets tested out on TNT a little bit. And then ultimately, you know, maybe down the road, someone's going to tell him, hey, sometimes you need to be a little bit more hot takey to make it in this business, because that's how we do things, which is inherently wrong.
Yeah.
So I'll stake my claim immediately here. If I win the lottery, like the big time lottery, and I become a billionaire and I buy my own network, I'm putting Vince Carter and Chris Bosh in as my primary analyst, and I don't care if people say, well, that's boring. No, because boring shouldn't be the main concern. It's whether or not it's smart analysis.
Right.
That should be the name of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, I feel like Inside the NBA has probably shaped the way that other networks approach their NBA shows too, especially the types of players that they go after, because Charles Barkley is in that same mold where he tries to say things that are hot takey or
don't get fired, Brian.
That's his shtick, and that's fine, it works, but like he is more entertaining about doing it. Like somehow the inside guys, maybe it's the chemistry between them, maybe it's Ernie Johnson being able to reel them in, and he does call, especially like, I mean, Kenny I think is the one who, you know, all of them have hot takes, but Kenny is probably the one who's like most grounded and gives the best insight into the most topics, I would say.
Absolutely. And it's not even close.
Yeah. So like they have the blend of a guy like Kenny who would be in that Vince Carter mode, who would be in the Chris Bosh, or even like a Shane Battier. I'd love to see him get some opportunities as well.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yep. Yeah. And then you've got guys like Shaq and Chuck, who are more there to be the comedic relief, and you know it works on Inside. More often than not, it works. I think ESPN is honestly jealous of the success that Inside has had, because it's been one of the longest running best studio shows of any sport. So they've, you know, ESPN is trying to find that right combination and cannot still. But like Kendrick Perkins is clearly just trying to emulate Chuck. He's just doing a terrible job of it.
Yeah, and again, I want to make sure that this message is conveyed properly. I don't begrudge Kendrick Perkins for taking on a job at ESPN.
Right.
Like, if he's getting told, you know, hey, go on the air, get paid what I only assume is at least hundreds of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. to utter your opinion. Like, hey, cash them checks. I get that. But at the same time, on the flip side of that is that it hurts the brand that is NBA basketball. Yeah. And I don't think it needs to be that way. Hell, look, if we even go down the line with NBA coverage off ESPN, you have Jeff Van Gundy, who on NBA broadcasts are basically spending 80% of his time crapping on the product that is the NBA.
Right.
Which makes no sense. Like, his complaints comes in between hand down, man down, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
Welcome to NBA on ESPN. Like, Mike Breen, I love Mike. I think he should have so many, you know, better options next to him in that booth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've been crying about for years. But, like, I just don't understand what the end game here is for ESPN, who paid, like, so many billions for the rights to the NBA and are then following up by basically crapping on the product that they are broadcasting. Like, what's your game here? I don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally with you. It's... At a certain point, they'll hire people who actually like the game. You would hope.
One would hope. Yeah, yeah. And he, again, I understand that players from former players, that is, have a tendency to romanticize the era that they played in.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think there are players out there who are fully aware that hey, the league right now is very healthy. It's a very high quality product. I can totally recognize that, even though I played in the 80s and 90s. So it's about uncovering them and say, hey, you know what? You sound like a very reasonable former player. Let's give you a platform wherein you can actually be positive both about your own era and the era that is right now. Because objectively, this is a great effing era.
Yeah. And you know who's been shockingly great about that? Which you wouldn't expect given his stature in the game. I mean, Kobe was as well. But Allen Iverson is like one of the most positive people, and given how good, like, I mean, the guy is a certified, like, multi-time All-Star, MVP, Hall of Famer. Like, those are the types of players who always go into the back of my day, we were blah, blah, blah. And AI is just like, no, man, these players are great. I love them.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need more people like that. Fewer people just crapping all over the product, please.
Right. Not that I think AI would be, you know, the obvious candidate for a studio gig, but I do love the fact that he's very, very complimentary about young players and new players. Like, he was asked about a rookie a couple years ago. I don't even remember who the rookie was. And he was like, yeah, that guy, he's really good. He's got this thing. And, like, I was blown away by the positivity. So good on AI, man. Yeah. Good on AI.
Agreed. Well... Now that we spent 20 minutes defending players, we do need to bring up one thing that is coming out since the players have gotten to Orlando. One of the things Tuesday night when I was working, pictures of their meals started leaking out, and it's right now they're eating basically like box lunches because they were quarantined in their rooms for a bit. I think once they get out of quarantine, they will have chefs available to them and a couple of restaurants delivering takeout, all of whom are just coincidentally under Tillman Fertitta's empire. I'm sure it's just a total coincidence there. But we have also seen some complaints about the accommodations, specifically from Rajon Rondo, who tweeted a picture of his hotel room and said it looked like a Motel 6.
Oh, man, I got so upset. That one, like, oh, Rondo... Like, what is it with the whole 2008 Boston crew, huh? What is it with those guys?
Yeah, because Paul Pierce is also terrible. It's true.
Yeah. The only one who's real, even though he doesn't necessarily always is too realistic about the current events, is KG, but at least he keeps it real. Like, I appreciate that. But no, Rondo took this picture of a hotel room that is gorgeous. Like, look, let me just tell you a little bit here about my life, because I grew up the son of a stewardess. Okay, I have been virtually everywhere. I've flown around the globe multiple times. I have had over 500 flights under my belt in my life. So I've stayed at a multitude of different hotels, motels, whatever. And I've stayed at five stars, I've stayed at one stars, I've stayed at no stars. That right there, that picture that Rajon Rondo posted, was definitely up there in terms of the best that I've stayed at. And his whole idea was, this is a motel. You know what, man? Go to a Motel 6. Compare.
Yeah.
I would like to see that. Just get back to Earth all right with the rest of us.
Yeah.
My issue with him is he's losing like the fans with such a thing.
Right.
Like, that's where the PR game is completely lost.
Yeah.
Because if NBA players, and right now just one NBA player, is trying to get us to feel any sort of sympathy for the fact that they're staying at a luxury hotel that isn't up to their personal standard, that's a horrible, horrible PR spin.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I get it. I mean, I when Alex was interviewing for fellowship, like, we were flying all around the country for a couple weeks, and, like, we did one stretch where we went from Chicago to Seattle to San Fran or something like that. So we were, you know, out of our house for a week and a half, just, like, living out of hotels. And after a while, it does wear on you. Like, you just miss your bed and you miss your own home. And, like, I don't live in an NBA player's mansion or anything, you know? Like, right. I live in a house. That's about it. So I can understand Rondo, like, missing his luxury accommodations compared to a smaller hotel room where there just isn't that much to do, especially if you're locked in there for 36 hours. But as you said, he's got to read the room. Like,
yeah.
How many millions of Americans right now are out of jobs because of this pandemic? How many hundreds of thousands of people have lost people that they care about because of this? No one gives a damn if you are uncomfortable in a hotel room for 36 hours or that you're eating boxed lunches.
In a luxury hotel.
Yeah.
Luxury hotel room.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it is such a self-inflicted PR blow for the players. And this is one of the things I've been concerned about the whole time was that, you know, I thought, thankfully, like, the negotiations between the players' union and the league to get the season restarted didn't spill out in public very much. It was nothing like what went on with Major League Baseball, where it was a very public back and forth throughout. But it was like, that was my concern from the players' perspective, is they are going to be frustrated with a lot of the terms that were necessary to make this thing work. You know, not having your families there until, I think it's after the first round of the playoffs, having right. daily or near daily tests, like, you know, all the small details about, like, we can't have doubles ping pong or whatever. It's inconvenient. It's definitely inconvenient, and no one should be downplaying that. At the same time, your inconvenience relative to an average person, a lot of people, like, I think it was almost 40% of people did not pay for their house in July, either rent or mortgage. Like, if you are complaining about that kind of accommodation, if you're Rajon Rondo, you are just so clearly detached from reality, from, like, what a grand majority of the country is dealing with right now, yeah. that you just look like a dick, man.
Yeah. And, you know, I have this idea that Kendrick Perkins is not going to call out his former teammate for that.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't. I'm not going to watch any more Kendrick Perkins clips this week. So, by all means, Kendrick, go right ahead. But I agree. Yeah, probably not.
No. Oh, boy. Well, let's move on to more positive subjects. Because so far, we complained about Kendrick Perkins and Rajon Rondo, and we also more or less complained about Jamal Crawford and Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
Is there something positive on the agenda, Brian?
I will say this. You know, for one, Damari Carroll was very positive about the box lunches because a lot of people were tweeting out pictures with, like, no comment or what, I think, just to kind of show it. And, you know, a ton of people on Twitter started making jokes about it. And Damari Carroll is, like, tweeting or setting out a video. He's like, man, this is good cooking where I'm coming from. Like, this is great. And then I will say this about Embiid. He got there last night and tweeted a picture of his food. He's like, I'm going to lose 50 pounds when I'm here. And then he tweeted a picture of when he was, like, 16 years old in Africa and still super skinny and said, this is what it's going to look like when I get out of here. Like, if you're going to complain, at least make it funny like that. Yep. Or just leave it all to Joe. That might be the solution. Like, Joel Embiid, he's been very quiet on Twitter this year, which has been depressing for a number of reasons. It's great to see him back in action doing stuff like that. And yeah, maybe he should just be the NBA player's official liaison for any complaints, because he will at least put a funny spin on it and make us hate you a little bit less.
Yeah, I would be down for that. He's the one guy you always look at. Like, he can garner, you know, ironic sympathy in a way.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I really appreciate. Oh, he's great. Well, And honestly, I think it's going to get better. I think this was just more of also like this realization that yeah. these players are coming into the hotel. I think this was like a thing where they started realizing, oh man, we're going to be here for a while. Also, shout out to Pat Bev. Like yeah. he took people on like the visual tour of like, hey, and look at all the white t-shirts that I have. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, there's some of the guys are really amped up about it
yeah.
in a way, which I think is pretty nice because that just, when you have that flow of positivity, it just changes the situation so much.
For sure, yeah. I saw Myers Leonard has like the whole gaming setup. He brought down his customized yeah. PC. They look good. Maxi Kleba being the designated DJ for his room block was pretty entertaining.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta see that.
Yeah, DJ Maxi's throwing it down already, so that was good.
Nice.
Who else? Oh, I think yeah, JJ Redick's got a nice little podcast set up. Like some guys are definitely making the best of it, and I think you're right. This week was inevitably going to be the shock to the system, especially because they had to be constrained to their room right upon arrival. Now that a lot of these teams are going to start having the luxury of actually getting to explore the campus, and you know the details came out about all of the excursions that they're allowed to do. Like they can go into the parks after hours. They can have pontoon boat rides. They can like reserve bowling alleys. Like we're not putting them in prison for 3 months, guys. Like it's inconvenient compared to your $20 million mansion. Sure. But this would be a luxury vacation for 99% of America. So if you're going to complain, again, just go through Joe. He'll make it funny. That's my best advice to all NBA players right now. All right. Let's wrap up with an article that came out Friday from Brian Windhorst and Tim Bontemps. And it was on the 2020-2021 season and how the pandemic is going to present major complications, not just for this year, but for this next upcoming season, as we've been warning about. It's not just the threat of COVID, which you know is not showing any signs of going away in America anytime soon, but there's also going to be major financial ramifications, both from the cancellation of some regular season games this year and then the possibility that fans won't be in attendance next year. One thing that really stood out to me, and I know it caught your eye too, they said, after much chatter before the stoppage of play, of changes in the coaching ranks, several league executives told ESPN that teams might be more likely to hang on to coaching staffs longer than planned to avoid paying out millions to coaches fired in current market conditions.
Right.
So, are you ready for more Jim Boylan next year?
So that has been a thing that Bulls fans have been talking about for, I feel, a couple months now. Like, why is Jim Boylan still employed? And a part of this, I think, is definitely coronavirus related.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like they didn't really know at that time when new management came in when the season was going to be resumed or if it even was. And then the news came out that they weren't included. Like, it was a 22-team league. They were not included. And then the fan reaction immediately was, well, if they're not included, fire him immediately. And now it's just a matter of, we don't really know like the long-term play here. What if we go out and spend, you know, $25, $30 million on a new coach, and we don't even know if we get another season? Maybe something happens in fall, like a second wave, and everything just goes to crap. Then what? Mm-hmm. Then we're shelling out, you know, $5.5-6 million for a coach who's sitting at home on his couch. I have to assume that's the way they look at it. Now, personally, I do think that they're still the Chicago Bulls. So they still have, you know, enough finances to actually do that and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it's Will Gottlieb from Bleacher Report who said at some point, I don't even know if he said this publicly or just in a group DM, so apologies to Will, but I'm pretty sure that Jim Boylan has a $1 million guarantee off a $1.6 million contract, which is, for the Bulls specifically, absolute peanuts.
Right.
So I would probably just cut bait and go with someone else. But there are all sorts of angles on that. Like, ownership apparently just asked the new management to, hey, be fair to Jim. Like, give him a proper shot, because for some reason Tim Boylan deserves a shot because management likes him. Yeah, it's weird. But no, we've definitely been talking about that, you know, that decision, long-term decisions, both in terms of players, coaching staffs, whatever you're looking at, like down the road, you're probably not going to make those calls now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think any team's going to make any big decision that they haven't. Like, you know, some teams have already fired coaches and are looking for new ones. The Knicks just had their official interview with Tom Thibodeau, I think, yesterday.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think any teams are going to, like, necessarily rush out to fire any coaches or, you know, make any big trades until there's a much clearer picture of what next year's salary cap is going to look like, just because so much is still up in the air. I mean, the Windhorst and Bontemps article alluded to the likelihood that they're going to basically propose the inverse of what they did in 2016 with the cap smoothing, where that one would have artificially limited the amount that the cap went up every year instead of leading to that massive one-year spike that, you know, led to the Warriors getting Kevin Durant and every other team wildly overpaying players that they immediately regretted paying. This time around, since the cap, if they don't do anything artificial, would decrease so significantly, they're talking about smoothing out the damage and kind of, you know, maybe keeping it flat for next year and then having only minor increases, rather than, you know, it would have jumped $15 million pre-pandemic between this season and 2021-2022. So, yeah, I mean, I think just given the uncertainty both with the salary cap itself, but also, like, who's to say? I keep coming back to this point, and this is with all sports. It's not just the NBA. You know, I keep hearing, like, let's push football off into the spring. Let's push college football off into the spring. It's like, who's to say things are going to be better in January than they are in September? Like, I hope they are. I really, really hope they are. But there's just no guarantee of that. So, like, you know, people would, when we were having the original conversation of should they cancel the 2019-20 season and just start again in October, it's like, why do you think they're just going to start as usual in October?
Right.
Like, why do you think anything is going to be normal until we have a widely distributed vaccine, which even under the most optimistic circumstances isn't going to happen until the very end of this year or early next year? That's when they, like, that's the earliest it even gets approved. And if you think sports leagues are the first ones in line to get that vaccine, No. So, I mean, it's going to be, like, I keep coming back to this. I'm excited for this, you know, the season to start in a couple weeks. I'm nervous as hell about it, but I'm going to watch every minute when it's here. But I want us all to keep in the back of our heads, like, this might be the last basketball we get to watch for a while. Like, if they're going through all of these precautions now, and, you know, the season is going to stretch into October, knock on wood, if everything goes right, then we're going to have a 2-month gap between then and the start of the 2020 season. And right now the plan is for all teams to play in their original markets and, like, no fans in the stadium. Great. But I just don't know that. I hope there's a backup plan. That's all I'm saying.
I am sure that they're working on one. I am sure that they're doing everything in their power to get something done. But it's just such a tall task when you don't know what's ahead. I mean, you're practically guessing at this point. And that's not a criticism of the way that the NBA does things. Like, right now, everyone is just trying their best to make an educated guess about the future. Mm-hmm. Like, that's everyone's to sit in the same boat. And it's just, I mean, I think we've reached that point where we almost have to, like, take on this mentality of we'll cross that bridge when we get there, in a way.
Yeah.
Because we just don't know. We don't have the data.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I'm sure they are doing some, like, worst case scenario planning or contingency planning, because they have to be at this point.
But what is the worst case? Like, is that we, like, become dinosaurs and tigers overtake us or something? I don't even know.
The worst case is there's no season next year.
Yeah.
The worst case is that the pandemic gets even more out of control in the country. There is no way to safely play it, even in a bubble. No season next year.
Yeah. Look, I'm just going to level with you. If you guys don't get a hang of it, I'm not going to allow any of you guys in. I'm just not.
I think the rest of the world agrees with you.
Yeah.
I think we are all stuck here for a long time, like it or not.
Oh, God.
I will say, I mean, the other point that they brought up in this article is that, you know, depending on how they do navigate some of these financial issues, it might motivate teams to shed salary to manage any losses or affect team spending in free agency. So this is another point that I've been harping on at Forbes, especially where teams are probably going to be more desperate than usual to salary dump, but there's only going to be, I mean, even pre-pandemic, when the salary cap was supposed to be $115 million, there were only six teams that were projected to have meaningful cap space this summer. So now this fall. So there aren't going to be many opportunities to salary dump players. Maybe you trade, you know, a guy like Nicholas Batum all of a sudden becomes one of the more valuable assets in the league because he's only got 1 year left on that expiring deal. And it's huge. So you could flip him for a guy with 3 or 4 years left and at least escape.
Michael Jordan just got hot and bothered.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like he might become a trade asset now.
Yeah,
which is just for financial reasons. Like teams that are in dire straits financially are gonna might have to make some very tough decisions where they're like clearly from a basketball perspective they're on the losing end of the deal, but like you know finances force their hand.
That means Otto Porter can be a trade asset.
He could be a huge one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah, I mean it's like. Again, this is, you know, way out there thinking, and we'll see what actually happens. But I feel like this offseason really might, much like 2016, like this might shape the field of contenders for the next 5 years. Because if a team like, you know, the Warriors or the Sixers, who are already projected to be way over the luxury tax, if they just have to, like if the Sixers just have to salary dump Al Horford just because they can't afford to pay him, and they're going to attach Matisse Thybulle or Josh Richardson or whoever just to get off of him. All right, they take a step back. They're no longer real threats in the East. If the Warriors, I don't think they're going to like salary dump Andrew Wiggins or Draymond Green, but you know, if they had like hypothetically if they had to, that's going to knock them down a peg as well. And if a team could capitalize, like the Atlanta Hawks are sitting pretty with all that cap space and no one to really spend it on this fall. Like, there might be decent players you could pick up. Like, if the Sixers are trying to dump Al Horford, the Hawks would be like, all right, cool. What else are you going to give us?
Yeah. And they even know Al because he played there for so long. So there's an infrastructure in place where they can almost immediately optimize him while taking on, like, Matisse Thybulle and maybe even a protected future first or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So this is just something, I mean, again, we are focused on 2019 because it's right in front of us, but this is just the way that my brain has been working since March. It's like, I don't really care who wins this year because it's just so weird anyway. I'm much more focused on, like, this stuff is going to affect the league for years to come. Like, this, whoever wins this ring is almost inconsequential. It's like, all right, who's going to be in position to win the next 3 or 4? I think these next few months may go a long way in informing that.
Mm. So one thought, because you know, if worst case scenario is out and next season gets canceled, there is thankfully a team out there that's going to pick up much of the slack. So we as basketball enthusiasts and analysts can actually still get, our passion delivered to us. That FC Barcelona, they have a basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wrote about this on Forbes. They apparently have an agreement in place with Pau Gasol and Nick Kalithis, which for most people doesn't ring a bell, but he's been one of the best point guards in all of Europe over the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Barcelona, in terms of quality, is nearing like NBA quality of a team. Like, not entirely, but they're very close to it. They are a powerhouse. So if the NBA is canceled next season, I would definitely like try to pivot into the ACB and just watch them. Now, the interesting thing for me is, do you think if the NBA season is ultimately canceled for next year, do you think they would allow players who have international ties to go back home and maybe even play in Europe for a year?
Oh, that'd be cool. Probably not, because they're under contract.
Yeah.
But
even so, like, maybe some sort of way, like, even just to keep them active so they don't sit around for, like, 2 years.
Just move the NBA. I think you said this last episode. Just move it to New Zealand next year. That's the best play.
You know, it's funny because the more I was joking and the more I was thinking about it after we hung up, I was like, this is actually an idea.
Yeah.
Like, it's on the surface, it sounds impossible, and I don't even know about, like, the stadium accommodations over there. But, like, it makes sense on the surface, right? Just go somewhere where it's the most safe and conduct the league there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, I think they need to consult Dana White for Fight Island. We can have NBA Islands right next door.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, no, I mean, the really interesting, like, if next season, God forbid, it does get canceled, and NBA fans start watching more European basketball, does that mean that for one season we will actually stop crapping on European prospects?
Oh, I hope so.
Are there any good ones next year? Are there any, like, potential Lucas that are sitting out there that would have gone under the radar and now might get exposed as actually being good?
Oh, for this year's draft or for 2021?
For 2021.
No, not Luka level, not yet. There are a couple good ones. From Real Madrid, there's Usman Garuba, a big man, a power forward, like 6'8", 6'9". I don't want to quite say that he could be the next Bam.
Oh.
But he is a very, very interesting prospect. And I think with the right coaching, with the right freedom, much like they gave Luka, I think he could be one of the most interesting big men coming up, at least from that draft class.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
There's definitely something there. The question is if he stays or if he wants to go to the NBA in 2021 or if he stays a year. Like, because some players don't necessarily enter their name in the draft like in the first eligible year.
Yeah.
So I don't know about his time frame, but he would definitely be interesting. Like, he's already pretty chiseled and, like, filled out, and he's, like, I think he's 18 right now. I could be wrong. I don't have him in front of me here, but it's something along those lines. Like, physically, he's way ahead of the curve.
Interesting. Yeah, that would be my one morbid curiosity is for one season, would you not be able to say, are there not people who are just going to sleep on Europeans just because they're European?
Yeah. He's 18, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
18, 6'8", 235, and athletic and clever. Like, you know, I saw him play in a game where, you know, he had some skills where you would kind of, like, think back real quickly to, like, Weber. When, you know, you know how Weber in the post sometimes we had this fantastic footwork, and he would just kind of, like, move himself around to where he could get an open dunk or an open layup despite actually having, like, two people on him.
Yeah.
Like, Garuba has a little bit of that. Like, the footwork is not even close to being, you know, as flawless as Weber, obviously. But there's a great deal of patience in him. See, now we're starting to talk about basketball. Now I can't stop because that's the far more important thing.
But we'll have actual, in theory, we will have actual basketball to discuss in exactly 3 weeks.
Yeah. Maybe.
In theory.
maybe.
Fingers crossed. Knock on wood. Well, hopefully, I mean, again, this is one of the most important time periods of this whole thing. Like, now that all the players are there, the next couple days are going to go a long way toward telling us whether this thing can actually work or not. So everyone if you are excited about the season, if you're nervous about the season, whatever, we should all just keep our fingers crossed that, you know, knock on wood, there are no major outbreaks in the coming days. Because if there aren't, then the odds of us actually seeing an NBA season in a couple weeks go much higher than anyone would have thought a month or two ago. So yeah, everyone say best wishes, keep the NBA in your thoughts and prayers for the next few days, and hopefully they and we all get through this together. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
Well, you too, Brian, but before we leave, you know, there was this thing where I would recommend a movie, or at least comment on a movie that I've seen, and I'm a little bit ashamed to admit this, because it took me until 2020 to actually see The Breakfast Club.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is the pinnacle. It's at least talked about as the pinnacle movie of the 80s, right?
Oh, no. Are you, if you're about to crap on The Breakfast Club, I'm out.
It was god-awful.
Oh!
It was god-awful.
No!
I gave it a 4 out of 10. I just couldn't, like, there were so many ridiculously fabricated stuff. Like, the dance, where they choreographed the dance. So it was like, what? And he, and you, crawling in the ceilings. I'm like, no. I wasn't with it. I came in with supreme expectations, and I was let down. I'm really sorry. So for the Europeans listening out there who may not have watched The Breakfast Club yet, like, because they're as slow as me,
sure.
Just don't. Don't.
Man, I already didn't trust your movie opinions based on every DC movie you've ever reviewed. But now you're definitely out.
Oh, no, I couldn't. But hey, look, I'm also the guy who didn't like Ferris Bueller's Day.
What? So, oh, my God. Yeah. All right. Yeah. We're switching this segment. Next time, it's going to be which terrible reality show that I've been watching.
Oh, I already know which one you're going to be choosing then. That's going to be X on the Beach.
No, I found that there is one on Netflix called Too Hot to Handle that I was late to the boat on, but oh my God, it's excellent. We'll go into it next time. But yeah, in the meantime, everyone catch up on that in a couple days so we can have a review session on just how trash every single person on that show is.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not going to do that, full disclosure.
Oh, yeah. You're missing out.
No, I'm really not. But in the meantime, Brian, don't die.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, man.